Thank you for joining us for Be Our Geek, where everyone is a geek about something and where we cover your pop culture landscape through our geek lens. We are broadcasting from the Twin Cities Film Fest studios. I'm Ms. Shannon, once again here with my friend, co-host, and podcasting husband, James Satia, executive director of the Twin Cities Film Fest. Hello, Jay.
What up, homie?
I was talking about you for multiple reasons last week, and it was all good. So I have some good stuff planned for Be Our Geek in the future. I ran into a young man who is very excited to come on our show in the future. He's a comedian. Mo Yakub did a show with me. He wants to come on and talk to you about Bollywood.
He does?
Yes. So we're going to set that up. I promised him that when we get back, we are going to have him on the show because Mo was very excited. He said your name with the most flavor and the most accent I have ever heard, even though he does not talk like that normally.
I love that.
So we're going to have him on in the month of July. But on today, our guest geek this week, and I am good friends with her. And when I mentioned who should we bring on this week, she was the first name that you sent me. So I was glad that you brought her up. So our friend Roxanne Battle. So Roxanne is here with us as well.
Thank you. It's good to see you. You know, I've always told everybody I was a closet nerd, which was translation closet geek.
Yes.
I'm coming out of the closet today.
Yes, welcome, welcome. Let it fly. We are also going to cover the things that, you know, Roxanne does in her more professional life, yep, because she is an award-winning and best-selling author with her book, Pockets of Joy. Then we're going to talk about the particular thing that she is geeking about currently, and I got some background information about this as well. I did talk to some people out in the community that were aware of your particular geekdom, and they were they had an interesting perspective
on it.
You're
spying on me?
I just brought up that you were going to talk about it, and then they gave me feedback. So I'm going to share the feedback with you,
great,
of course, Roxanne.
Did your research.
And so, Roxanne, the other thing that we want to cover before we get to our second segment that is going to be all about Roxanne Battle. Jayton, I want to check in with you. So, Roxanne, Jayton is part of a fantasy film club.
Yep.
Like, anytime you hear about, like, no, not fantasy, like, XXX fantasy. I mean, like, fantasy football or fantasy sports. Exactly. Which I am very shocked. She is my most polite lady friend. I was like, well done, Roxanne. Normally, I'm the filthy one. I'm glad that your brain goes there out of cage. I was like, and that happened without wine. Thank you. So, perfect. So what it is just like when you hear about guys that go into fantasy sports or women that play fantasy sports.
Yeah. So it's much like, you know, football, fantasy baseball, we quote-unquote recruited a team of films that we think is going to do well in the quarter. And so we bid on films and everybody goes around, the highest bid takes that film, and then hopefully we just wait until the film gets released and the box office results. So at the end of the quarter, the individual that has the most box office dollars based on their 10 film selection wins the pool of money.
Now, the thing
that's
is that
actually clever.
And yeah, it's great. And Jayton, who is our movie geek, he is the executive director of a film festival. He knows all about movies. Now, the thing is that he has had some epic fails in doing his research on what films he should bid on. What was the biggest fail, the one that you should have bid on, but you didn't do your research and didn't understand the title?
It was called U.S.
Which it was not.
It was Us.
He
and
could.
I completely thought it was a new movie
called U.S.
I don't think some people will go see the movie U.S. because I had like other ones and it was the very last one that was bid on, and I'm like,
is there a consistent thread with the movies that do well? Have you found
Marvel? So the ones that obviously are the biggest blockbusters, Star Wars, anything Disney, honestly,
right,
that's going to have the marketing power behind it. But the ones that kind of hold you to the top or the second or third or out of the second or third are the ones that you do a little bit of research on and based on the genre and the demographic that they're going after. So my epic win,
yes,
was I bid on Black Panther.
Right.
And that was before, like, none of the other guys got, like, how important Black Panther could be.
Right.
All right. I finally saw it. I'm a laggard when it comes to that. Overhyped, yes or no?
Not for when it came out. Does that
not
make
for
sense?
When it came out. No.
It came out 2 years ago, and it was the right time for that story to be told.
For
now, if you were to say, now again, there's nothing against putting out content that people will watch and pandering towards a specific genre, and I get that. Like, there's a lot of horror movies. It too is coming out, right? Like,
correct.
All these are, again, at the end of the day, it's a business. So from an executive standpoint, now a lot of the content that will be coming out will be, quote unquote, going after that demographic hardcore, and that is going to fail.
because it's not natural, it's forced, and so that's where I think...
So you're saying the timing of Black Panther attributed to...
Yes.
Not so much the content.
Well, I think if you were looking at the overall genre of superhero films, was it the best superhero film that had ever been released?
No.
Was it the most solid film that features Afrofuturism? Definitely. That's how I felt. At the time that it came out... Well,
talk
was
about Wonder Woman, right? That's DC and not Marvel. Talk about how successful Wonder Woman was. And obviously the next one's coming out next year. So that was all about, not necessarily feminism, but the way they portrayed it was like a women power. But when it came out, it was the right time.
Correct.
People were hungry for content.
Right.
Yeah, and they were hungry for content for Black Panther. Having been a laggard and saw it well after the hype died, I was disappointed.
Why?
Because I thought that the African American character, the black people in that movie were one dimensional. I mean, they never ate. They never had sex. You never saw how beautiful their homes were. You didn't see the children. They were just these one dimensional beings. And then when you did see them in Wakanda, which I heard so much about, Wakanda wasn't a beautiful... I mean, you saw the flyovers. Mm-hmm. And then when they were in the city, it was just like this outdoor festival atmosphere.
I think that if you watch it in line with the rest of the Marvel films, I think that it had a very specific Black Panther tone and tenor, like they do with every subgenre in the world, in the universe. But I think that it did do a good job of building out that character. If you put it on par with the way that they built out the Ant-Man franchise and the Thor franchise, I think that you got as much about Wakanda and that sub-universe as you do the rest of the Marvel Cinematic Universe.
Well, I think
with
it's
that film.
Also it was also a better backstory.
Correct.
For that particular character.
Agreed.
Yes.
Agreed.
And I
would see one movie every 2 years.
Well, I gotta get you up to speed.
Yes, the other reason why I liked Black Panther, especially at the time that it came out, is that you know, as a person that grew up watching these superhero fantasy and sci-fi films, I thought it was just a very solid superhero film that happened to focus on Black and African characters. And that was part of what I wanted. I wanted them to make a solid film where they wouldn't go, it's good for a... And that's what I felt about Black Panther. It was a solid, efficient superhero film. I thought it was solid for the franchise. I thought it was written in a very efficient manner. It didn't have a lot of exposition. All the things that I pick a lot of films apart for in this genre, it just did. I thought it had a three-dimensional villain. I thought it did enough for the way that they built the family aspect. I thought that the women had agency without us going, oh, look, he has a whole guard of women. It was, they just are amazing, badass women. And that's why I liked
it. I love it. I love it. And I can see that. And I'm someone who came to the film after all the hype. So
right.
I had a much higher expectation of, you know, I'd read the articles about the hairstyles and the costumes and all that. So
well,
I was like, you know.
You got to talk about behind the scenes, right?
Yeah.
You had an African-American director.
Mm-hmm.
And then predominantly all the set, the entire crew, majority of it was either African-American or diverse. And I think those behind-the-scenes stories were told really well through costume design, through... production design, through the conversations that were happening even between characters as well.
So what you're saying, Jane, is I'm woefully misinformed.
No,
totally
your opinion is valid.
Here's the thing, right? For me, at the end of the day, I look at a consumer's reaction at gut feeling.
Right.
So whatever your gut feeling is, first and foremost, if a film elicits emotion, regardless of what kind it is, the filmmaker has done its job.
Right.
Right? So I never walk out of a film, I've walked out of films going, eh. And I think that's the biggest slap in the face to any filmmaker. It's like, I didn't elicit any emotion. It wasn't even horrible for you. Like, you got to give me something. Why was it bad? Why was it good? What did you hate about it? What did you love about it? Because
mm-hmm.
that's feedback for an artist to take into their mm-hmm. next project.
So right.
when a consumer like you, who rarely watches films, and when they watch it, they have a guttural reaction in whatever format, that's a win for the filmmaker and, again, for film going. Otherwise... Same thing. You listen to music more than you watch movies, right?
Yes.
Your favorite type of genre, you're always accustomed to certain things that you're going to listen to. But when you experience something new, you automatically know it's for me or it's not for me.
Right.
See, the only type of movies, my favorite type of movies are superhero movies, the Man-Man movies. I call them the Man-Man movies.
What's one of your favorites? What's one of your favorites?
Spider-Man.
There you go.
Mm-hmm. Oh, I'm sorry. No, Iron Man.
Iron Man, sure.
Tony Stark.
Tony is like, and
he's a perfect superhero.
Yeah. He's quirky. He's funny, you know. And I just expected the same treatment from Tony Stark that I did that, you know, in Black Panther.
And those are the kind of conversation that we like to have with our friends that are a little bit adjacent to our normal world. Because, like, Jayden and I will have a tendency to go more deep dive in this and be able to go, well, this and from the comic book and then the sub this and then when they did the remake and then did you see this? Yep. Not everybody does that. And we know that not everybody does that. That's part of what we do here on the show is that we do come from the posture that everyone is a geek about something. There's something that you know much better than Jayden and I know. And we like to hear you get excited about that. That I don't know. Because we can sit here and talk about, you know, the deep dive into, and we've had numerous conversations on, you know,
we don't
even,
necessarily agree.
No, we don't all the time because we both like Black Panther. I liked it more, but I think I also came from a need for having Afrofuturism portrayed in a certain way on a big screen than Jayden did based upon his particular cultural circles. But there's other films that he was all super into that I'm like, that film was C+ at best to me. And that's part of what it is.
Speaking
is
of
which,
it,
I have that.
Aladdin. Did you watch it?
I haven't seen it yet. Did okay. you see it yet?
Haven't seen Aladdin.
I saw it and I thought it was better than what everybody was saying online before you go watched it.
Fair
I think
enough.
Will Smith, you get read an article, which I agree with. Will Smith is still a star.
Okay.
Like, people would go watch Will Smith and everybody who's like, oh, he's failed in a couple last. Like, no. He's a star. Right. He brought a new depth to that particular character. If you've ever, did you ever seen Aladdin? Like even the cartoon?
I saw the Robin Williams cartoon.
Yes.
So, and then I saw the Broadway, the theater version of it as well.
Yeah. So it's a different take on the same characters. It's updated. They give Princess Jasmine two new songs.
Okay.
So she's got a little bit more of a voice in it. Their costume design is brilliant. It's still Aladdin in the fact that it's colorful and it's fun. You get the CGI with the animals and all the characters were well cast.
I'm more on board with this update from watching the trailers and such for Aladdin than I was on board for the new Lion King, because I felt like the Lion King was a scene by scene recreation with CGI animals, and so it might be different.
And
but that's what I've
about
seen
Lion King
so
too,
far.
I was going to ask you,
but
what
I'm
do
like,
you,
why
how
do we
how do you
have
think
that?
That's going to do?
I think, of course, it'll do just fine, just because it's
right?
Disney. That's it comes
and
with
that
marketing machine.
And we need
that
kind
machine.
Of content. What else are a bunch of people that have 10, 11, and 12 years going to take their kids to go see?
I think people will go see Aladdin second time as opposed to Lion King second time. The reason I think that is I think Lion King is a little too dark. The way they're portraying everything, they look too
too real. And the thing that I was hoping that actually they would, and I was a big fan of Aladdin, the old cartoon version, and Robin Williams, and we all know that, you know, we've talked about this before. Robin Williams holds a very particular soft spot in my heart for multiple reasons. And so I was actually very excited when they cast Will Smith because I know how big of a personality you need to be able to fill that shoes. It has to be another blockbuster size personality. It couldn't be an unknown that's in that because Robin Williams is so Robin Williams in the way that he portrays everything. Even in like the indie films that I was in, it would still have a particular flavor to it.
This doesn't take away from Robin Williams. Does that make sense?
Yeah,
what Will Smith did was Will Smith. You can see Will Smith in this character.
And that's what I was going to say is that
bold.
Right, and that's what I feel about Will Smith and why I thought it made sense, is Will Smith is one of those actors that is almost to Will Smith for certain parts. Because when Will Smith shows up in a role, you can't not think it's Will Smith. He's a great actor, but he's Will Smith across the board.
And it goes all the way back to Fresh Prince.
Yes.
Those Fresh Prince-isms are still there decades later.
I feel like there's Robin Williams, there's Will Smith, there's Keanu Reeves. There's a couple of actors that you're like, no matter what vehicle you put them in, is still Will Smith, you know, Smith and that's tried, what I feel though. Like.
He's tried kind of not necessarily shedding that, but he tried it with The Pursuit of Happiness and with Seven Pounds.
What was that pound? I saw Seven Pounds. Yeah. I liked him in that. Yeah. And what was the other one where he was on screen for like 20 minutes all by himself in the first, it was the end of the world, he was a doctor, and there was some disease that was killing people, One, or what was it called? Yeah. I Am One or something like that.
Well, that, because that was one of the ones where I was like, that's one of the ones that made me think the way I do about Will Smith, is that one. Because it was a, because I mean, that was something where I read that book back when I was a kid. So I kind of had an idea what that particular character, you know, that whole apocalyptic, you know, I lost my family and I'm talking to a mannequin character. Yeah. That's why you have to always keep one friend. Even if it was your least favorite friend, just learn that from this show, Roxanne. Okay. Keep one friend. Because anybody that's by themselves goes crazy pants. Yep. Two, you might need a protein source. So if they're a little weaker than you, then keep them. But that's good to know in an apocalyptic scenario. You learn something from being on Geek. But the thing about Will Smith is that even in 7 Pounds and in, you know, and all of those things and the, whatever the one with the Miles in the title, you know, even when he's doing that, and I do think he is a good dramatic actor as well, he has two speeds. He has comedy Will Smith. Yep. He has drama Will Smith. Yep. He's Will Smith. Mm-hmm. You can't go, I think this is the character. Like, you're never going to start calling the character the name, you're going to go Will Smith as this. Does that make any sense?
Well, there was that one space sci-fi movie he did with his son.
That was garbage.
And, right, because everybody said it was Will Smith trying to be Lawrence Fishburne. Mm,
I didn't hear that, but I could see that. It was, that was a
and
horrible
it tanked.
Movie.
Horrible movie.
It was a horrible movie.
Horrible.
I watched, go watch Aladdin.
Okay.
And if you do like, and both of these movies I have in my fantasy league.
So you were like, I'm going to tell everybody to go see it.
It's doing okay for me. It's doing well, based on the amount of money I spent on it. And then I watched John Wick. So if you like action and if you... It's Keanu Reeves. So it's... Again, he's Keanu Reeves. Keanu Reeves is Keanu Reeves.
But the thing that I heard about John Wick 3, and I haven't seen this one yet, is that as far as those very action-driven... Just the choreography of the shootouts and the fight scenes, it is amazing for that, which is a little dated, kind of.
I agree.
But he does, it is, this is the model of what those films are supposed to be look like, is what I read about.
I agree. And okay. I think there are epic dance sequences, okay. Which for me, dance sequences in this realm is fight choreography.
Right.
Right. They're a 10-minute constant, like the camera does, you don't know where the edits are. Wow. It's such a fluid thing, and that's what he does really well. And I think his stunt double is right on, as well as all of his counterparts who are either the bad guys or whatever he's fighting.
What film are we talking about?
John Wick 3.
John Wick 3. It's a third movie in this franchise.
Oh,
but it's the first one
was... I've probably been under a rock for, like, forever.
And the first one is kind of a sleeper, like, where it... Like, people saw the first John Wick, and people were kind of like, wait, what? And then you saw it, and you're like... That was dope, you know, kind of thing. It was super
it was a
amazing.
Sleeper hit.
Yes, and so it just nobody really expected it to be as amazing as it was.
He's an assassin, basically. Yeah. He's an assassin, hired assassin. Right. And so, basically, what happens is somebody kills his wife.
Yeah. Which we've heard that narrative in lots of these films. You're like, oh, okay.
And so then he takes revenge, and he's kind of like, I'm done with this. Like after he kills a guy, and then somebody kills his dog, who his wife's dog that he's got his own memory. So then he goes crazy. He was like, right. You can't kill my dog. And then the next thing is just like two movies and him like killing
taking
people
revenge
because taking revenge for killing the dog. And now actually they made they're actually optioned a fourth one. So
yeah.
Fourth one's
and so it is super fun. And I do think that it's in the realm of violent films, we'll say. I do kind of think that as far as back to what Jayton was saying about the taking the way that it is filmed, they are very fun to see in the theater because there's so much going on that it is very entertaining to see in the theater. And so before we take our break, I want to talk about one more film. We're going to take a pivot, and I want to make sure that we talk about this film because it is the kind of film that doesn't historically do well in the theater because it's something that you think you can wait until you see it on a small screen. And that is the new movie, Late Night, starring Mindy Kaling and Emma Thompson. So a lot of times, historically, these comedy films, they'll make some money, but they don't make a ton of money in the box office the way they used to, because they don't have to be that kind of destination.
It's almost an obligatory, we're going to release it in 800 theaters across the country, but they know that their bread and butter is VOD and or
right.
Post.
Yeah. Right.
Netflix
right.
or wherever it's going to end up.
Right. And
just
full disclosure,
got the names in it.
We were invited to a screening of it. They actually gave us, for Be Your Geek, some passes to give away and some prize packs and such. So I wanted to mention that before everybody started saying that my particular review, because this film comes out on June 14th, that my particular view is skewed by the fact that they gave us things to give away. We've given away things before, and we've still said that the things were C+, and we've been very honest, but they're like, but you'll like the stuff, you know, kind of thing, and it's free.
And?
I loved the movie Late Night.
Okay.
As someone who is very critical of comedies as well. But I laughed out loud on numerous occasions. You know, so this is a film where it stars Emma Thompson as a late night talk show host who is kind of at the point where she is very well-intentioned, but the industry would say she's past her prime, and how she tries to maintain her show and keep her position. And she hires a new young writer through a comedy of errors. It's Mindy Kaling's character, Molly, and how they interact. So it's not all about their interactions. It's also a story that's about women in male-dominated industries.
There's another theme, and that's agency, female agency.
Yes, it's about that. And so it does take on the themes of, what is it like to be a woman in an industry where there's not a lot of women? What is it like to be a woman that's aging in media and in Hollywood? It takes on all of these subject matters in such a funny but effortless way. It's just so, the way that it presents its story is just, you know, as someone who's been in this, and this is why I think you'll love it too, Roxanne, mm-hmm. as someone who works around all these things, it's just more like, here's how I can showcase a scenario in a very authentic way, and it's still funny. It doesn't feel like they're pounding you over the head with it. It's like, yeah, this is what would happen if you were a woman and you were 50, and we're going to comment on it, and we're going to make a joke. Here's what would happen if you're a woman of color, and this is how the guys around you talk. And now all of a sudden, you're throwing them all off.
But it's like, that's why humor is such an important vehicle, because it makes medicine go down.
Right. Because everything about it was... I could go, I see it. You know, I'm like, I get it. And even the way that the two women interact, I thought was very authentic. Because, you know, Emma Thompson's character is still going, as someone who's been in the industry longer, going, this is just the way it is. And yeah, maybe it's not fair, but why are you showing up all of a sudden complaining that this is the way that it is? Just deal. You know, I've been dealing with it for decades, and that's just life. And it's so funny and so charming. Emma Thompson is wonderful. Mindy Kaling is amazing.
Did Mindy write the film?
Yes, and I believe directed. I might have
wrong. Oh, wow, she directed the
film.
Yeah,
so she was fabulous. Absolutely fabulous. And I, you know, I want every outfit that she wore
in
it.
She was on Colbert last night talking about the film and the project, and talked about her first experience meeting with Emma Thompson and how she went to go see Much Ado About Nothing.
Yes, I love that.
Way back in the day, which is one of my favorite adaptation of the play. I mean, they had some killer... Keanu Reeves was in that movie.
Right? Barely, but still.
He was in it.
Yeah. It was like, hello, Keanu. And Keanu, he came in and Keanu'd it.
Keanu,
he's like, hello.
He Keanu'd Shakespeare, which was interesting.
Do we ever talk anything about like what's on Netflix?
We do.
What do you got?
Well, I just finished binging Renee Zellweger's new series, the first season of What If.
I heard good things about it. I haven't seen it. So tell me why you would recommend it or not recommend it.
I would recommend it. It kept me intrigued, even though some of the characters might fall into, you know, sort of the caricatures that you see in thrillers. You know, the clandestine, evil, bad guy. You know, the cool, controlled, evil woman that Renee... plays. There were some twists that were very modern, that were very now. There was the writing. The characters are crystal clear. They're cut clear, and the writing is very good. And it kept me guessing. And
wonderful.
As someone who's got a producer mind, there were some things that I didn't see coming.
Oh, wonderful. Okay, we're going to add that to the binge list. Hamilton bench list.
And her clothes were to die for.
Okay. And I just looked up Mindy Kaling. She wrote it. She did not direct it. They had another female director. So I think that we have some good things for people to do. They can sit there and they can wait to see a couple of these films. We encourage you to go see some films on the big screen while you have the opportunity. If you don't have time, we now know what you should binge when you're at home on your Netflix, right?
What if?
So we're going to make sure you check that out. And we are going to take our first break, and then we're going to come back. We're going to talk to Roxanne Battle. And it turns out that our friend Roxanne Battle, along with being an award-winning journalist, a best-selling author, she is also a big fan of tea parties. So we are going to cover that. We're going to go in a deep dive on some silver and some polishing and some tea when we get back on Be Our Geek. Welcome back to Be Our Geek, where everyone is a geek about something. I'm Ms. Shannon. Jake Satia is here. Our guest geek this week, who is rummaging over there, is our good friend.
She's got a magnifying glass.
I know, award-winning journalist, best-selling author, Roxanne Battle. You can find her at RoxanneBattle.com. That's Roxanne with one N. So, Roxanne.
Huh?
Roxanne and I had the joy of going thrift shopping together about a month ago. And I have been cocktailed before by Miss Battle. So I was familiar with her, and I thought the kind of things that she did with her free time. You know how you get to know a friend and you go, I think I know what they're about. And then you see them in a different setting and they take a turn that you're like, oh my word.
I lost my mind.
And it's like when people come to my house and they're like, what are those
it's
on
like
the wall?
The road not taken.
Yeah, when I go, and it's the same thing. Like, and Roxanne, first of all, I want to talk to you from a position of love as your friend. This is a safe space. Look, I collect action figures, comic books, and swords. I have, so this is all love.
No.
And this is all love.
No one knows this about me except my absolute closest friends. And I'm revealing this publicly today for the first time.
And so when I asked her and I told her what the show was about, and I said, okay, we'd like you to come on and talk about something you're a geek about, she goes, like, well, I'm not a geek. And I was like, everyone's a geek about something. What is it that you want to talk about that normally when you bring it up around your friends, they're like, oh my gosh, can we not again on that? And she said, oh, I know!
So she got excited.
We've done enough shows where people say, I geek out about, and there's generic things. Generic as in, like, people. A lot of people geek out about music. A lot of people geek out about films. A lot of people geek about comic books. I've never, ever, ever.
I can't wait to talk about this.
Ever heard about anybody that says this particular topic?
Tea parties. I geek out about tea parties and my silver.
It's like a
lamp
on the table
collection.
Here. What is that? You're right.
This is
Adam's
a silver
come out?
Teapot. This is a silver teapot that and so like and so then I'm okay. On
you're
the,
giving me such joy.
It's
a silver,
wait, 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 wait. But so let me show you.
It's a show and tell podcast.
Yes,
great.
Yes, it's a show and tell podcast. Okay, so you hear this? These are silver goblets. Okay, look at this one. Okay, it's yucky. Look at this one. This is what I do to the silver. Describe
you
it,
Jane. Polish it.
I do, and I have a secret that you can. That's why. Like I find them. And
do you have your own proprietary mix?
They're jet black. I find them, and they're jet black. And then what? This. I did this today right before I came over.
She
look
cannot
at this.
See, this stay is the off point. Of her seat.
We were
this is
in,
insane. Yeah.
Look, Jayden, see, we were in the thrift store when she found that tray.
This is what it looked like when I found it. This is what it looked like when I got done with it. And I did this in a matter of minutes because there is a scientific process for polishing silver that takes just minutes. That's why all of this stuff is discarded.
Okay, okay.
Because people see it and it turns black and they said, I'll never get it shiny again. I have discovered.
Roxanne,
through
breathe.
The internet.
Breathe, Roxanne.
Okay.
Breathe.
I told you. I saw her. We're in a thrift store. Looking for stuff.
Thing.
And everything was fine.
Okay,
she saw that tray, Jayden, and she lit up. She turned into a whole
this.
Person.
This is
amazing.
How cute that is. Look, I
that's
did this
a really
in,
nice
I did that in a matter of minutes. And then what I'll do is I'll take it and I'll polish it some more and it'll be this was jet black.
So okay, so let's pause for a second. Okay. And unless we are going to talk about this. So give our listeners context behind why this particular hobby and or geekdom exists for you.
It's a marvelous question. It's a marvelous question. Okay, first of all, I also collect porcelain tea cups. I went to Harrods in London and had tea in the tea room at Harrods. It's just a thing for me. I think they're beautiful. And so it morphed from the teacups to the silver teapots. And in a nutshell,
it's the fair behind it too, right?
It's the spirit. In the context, you know, I talk a lot about joy, right, and happy. And all of these things were created. There's two points of context for me with my teapot and silver collection. One, all of these things were created to bring people together. And the number one predictor of living a joyful, happy life are your relationships, is your relationship with other people. So the silver goblets were created, you hear them tinging? These were created to bring people together. This gorgeous, ornate teapot that was created by the Rogers brothers, they established in 1847. This was created to pour tea and or coffee to bring people together. This lovely silver tray that was jet black when I found it, and now I can see my reflection in it after I polished it, was created to handle little pastries and little cakes to bring people together. So that's my fascination.
That's your why.
Yeah. That's my why, is that teacups and my silver teapots bring people together in the most beautiful way, in a beautiful setting, in an ornate, lovely setting where you celebrate your togetherness.
There's a soul connection already, right? The reason what I do what I do, is, which is a film festival, is to bring people together.
My geekiness is a geeky thing for me because it brings people together in a beautiful way, in an intentional way. You have to intentionally polish silver. You have to be intentional about making the tea and pouring the tea out of a silver teapot into a porcelain cup. You have to be intentional about setting out the tea treats. You know, there's the sweet and the savory. Though that's all intention and that's all on purpose, and the sole purpose is to celebrate our togetherness.
What I always find so interesting too when you do this is that it's also about the story and being able to share story.
That's my second point, Shannon. Mm-hmm. I swear we were separated at birth. One, it's to bring in togetherness, and that's why I have a magnifying glass here. The other isn't. Mm-hmm. Oops, sorry.
That's fine.
The other is indeed the story, because if you look in my magnifying glass, you will see the silversmith's imprint on the bottom of the pot. You'll see the imprint. You see that? If you look, you see the imprint. That imprint, if you look it up, will tell you when this pot was made, what version of it was made, who was a silversmith, and you can pretty much determine whether it was silver plated or sterling silver. Very, very big difference between silver plated and sterling silver, which is in a museum somewhere. And that's how these teapots came about, is because the average person wanted to be like the people in England, but they couldn't afford the exorbitant sterling silver. So a lot of this is copper over silver, and silver plated plating came about in like the 1800s. So yes, so first of all, it is a story. When you look at the imprint, you can tell who the silversmith was, and then I have another show and tell.
Okay. And Roxanne, I am appreciating your joy.
Okay. Yes. So now what I'm holding right now in my hand is a gorgeous silver water pitcher with an ornate handle and beautiful footed ornate feet on it. You turn it over, you see the silversmith mark. This was Rogers Brothers Silver Company, which is a very popular silver company, and then you see the particular make. There's a number 2507, which tells you what version of this water pitcher. Okay, so after I polish these up, I can't see the water. I can't see the mark of the silversmith until I polish it up.
Okay,
so I polish it up, and then I sit and I look it up and I research the story of how the particular piece of silver was made. The second story is, you see on this water pitcher, there's an engraving on it, and it says CWC.
1963.
Who was CWC?
Wow.
And what did he do in 1963, or she, that someone would present them with this beautiful silver water pitcher? My mind goes crazy imagining who was CWC and what did they do?
I feel like I'm on that TV show, The Antique Roadshow.
Because she really knows her stuff.
No,
she,
this is brilliant.
Lost it.
You watch those shows, and you again, all those individuals who think something is worth a value, but the most fascinating things is a subject matter expert standing there telling the story about where this came from, who this person was. Yes. And I think majority of those individuals who bring items to the Antique Roadshow are looking for that story.
The dollar amount
is a cherry on top, blah, blah. Right. But like, this is still means they would all hold on to all those items.
Right. Like, I look at, like, you can still see the thrift store price tag on this beautiful silver tray that I'm having. It was
$800 on this.
It's $299. I spent $299 on this silver tray on this water. This when I found this gorgeous silver water pitcher at the Goodwill. It was on a bottom shelf. It was jet black, and it was $5.99. And I polished it up, and I looked at the price of it. I researched it. Because it's silver plated. I might get $30. I might get $50 for it. Right, but. You're exactly right. I've done this long enough now that it's not about the price value. Although secretly, I hope one day I will stumble upon a forgotten piece of sterling silver, and right? But it's not so much the dollar value, is it, as it is the story.
Right.
Who, what kind of tea was poured from this teapot? And then I collect a whole bunch of silver trays. And I was like, what was served on this tray? At what event? Did some of my ancestors have to carry this tray into a room of people?
So let me ask you more of a now question. Now meaning we have the advent of social media. So you're able to tell your stories to a wider audience if you choose to, if you actually put it out there. It's one of your gifts, I would say, is storytelling. Just
Thank
knowing you.
You
and just knowing how much I've admired just your professional career and, of course, as friends. That being said, would you ever let you geek out?
Today is my coming
right?
out party. I said today is my coming out party. Now, what I have done for the last couple of years, there's a community center in St. Paul that I took all of my silver teapots. I've got dozens of them. And I took them down. I polished them all up. And I brought them to the community center. And I served tea to 100 elderly women out of my teapots. Brought me so much joy.
And to them, I bet.
And, you know, when I got up on the podium and I said, the pots that you're drinking out of are from my personal collection, the room cooed.
Yeah. Well, I think it's interesting that so many people, when they become a collector of a thing, we find this all the time. There are people who collect it in order to share it, and there are people who collect it in order to just feel that feeling of completion to have another thing that they have on a shelf in a closet.
I have to stop myself.
Yeah. And so you seem to also, though, make sure that you share and use the things that give you joy, and that's part of the process.
How many times have I invited you over for tea, Shannon?
I know, you have. Okay, it is so funny. But the one person, I'm not going to out them on what they said. I said, oh, I'm going to have Roxanne on my podcast. She's going to talk about her silver collection, her tea. And he's like, oh, no. And I was like, oh, I'm very excited. That's what we do. You have people that talk about it all the time. He goes, yeah, you can't go to her house. She has too many of those things. She's like, you won't fit in the house.
And I have to stop. I have to stop. I mean,
but we all get to that point where you go, how can I be more intentional about the thing that I love?
Yeah.
You know, because sometimes you just have to be realistic as a human being in the amount of space that you have.
I mean, this brings me joy on so many different levels. One is the story about how it was made with the imprint on the bottom. I can look up that imprint and I'm immersed in the story. If I find one that's engraved, I can wonder about that person. And then transforming a blackened, tarnished piece of silver into something that's shiny and beautiful, in which I can see my own reflection, that measurable outcome of taking something that somebody was discarded and thought was ugly and useless and transforming it into something beautiful and useful, I'm wired that way. I'm wired for measurable outcome. That's why I became
a
journalist.
And how long have you been full-on geek about this? Years, decades, like since you were a kid, like what was your first tea experience that kind of put you over the top on like that experience?
I found porcelain teacups on sale and they were the most beautiful thing I'd ever seen. And so I started collecting them and kept collecting them. And then I went to London and I was in Buckingham Palace.
It's like the mecca of tea.
I went to London and I was in Buckingham Palace and I bought a teapot, teacup in Buckingham
Palace.
You had
tea with the Queen?
I didn't have tea with the Queen. But
you had tea adjacent to the Queen.
I stood behind her chair in the royal dining room.
Wow.
And then they explained to me about how those state dinners are taking place. And I toured the throne room.
That's
I was inside
cool.
Buckingham Palace. And London is just magical. There's so much history there. And the connection with tea. And I love tea. Tea is healthy for you. It's good for you. I've always drank tea. I've always loved tea. And then I started collecting the porcelain teacups. And then within the last 5 years, I moved into the teapots.
Okay.
And it just brings me joy. I know it's like really geeky, but it's like my
I theme. Love it. You need to stop apologize. Being an apologize. We don't apologize for anything that we're geeks about. We don't ever apologize for it. We
had somebody who loved pasta and they talked about pasta making and that's what they geeked out
we
about.
Have a barbecue sauce friend. Yep, like right. Never apologize for what gives you like to watch you this excited, like to watch you clanging around in that box gives us joy as well. So never apologize, especially around us. We would love it. The thing that I think is interesting, though, too, when you throw your tea parties, because I've seen pictures, Jayden, we really should do this. Like, she gets out the very fancy macaroon. She has sherbets and such. Did you do, like, gelato or something? What did you do?
I did a parfait.
You did a whole, like, fundraising event at your house.
I did a parfait, and then I did the macaroons, and I make mandolins, which are those little tea cakes. I make mandolins? Them fresh.
See? I know.
Blueberry mandolins with lemon curd. And I do that.
She said mandolins. And yeah, my brain went to Star Wars and like said, Mandalorians? Is that a
I'm showing Jayden a picture of my tea party. And so
that is insane. That's ridiculous.
You see some of my
that's
plates.
Like a Pinterest thing.
And wow. So, right. And so this particular tea party, I used a porcelain teapot that had a pewter butterfly, because butterflies is another thing. That's why I actually bought that porcelain teapot in LA. It has a pewter butterfly on the lid, and pewter is part silver and part. Yeah, it's part silver. So yeah, so there's my parfaits. I make parfaits, and there's my beautiful porcelain cups. And then here's
a
tea party where I made blueberry mandolins from scratch with almond flour and regular flour, and I served it with lemon curd in an antique parfait glass. So there's one of my antique teapots that I actually drink out of, and I also serve it with crystal and linen and china teacups. I mean, they're the macaroons. I buy the macaroons. I have chocolate.
This was just for you and your cat.
Yeah. Yeah.
I love it because she makes tea parties, something that a lot of people would go, that is too bougie for me, I can't. She makes them very accessible, though. It's like anyone could feel beautiful and loved doing this type of thing.
I have to ask people to leave.
I could imagine. Absolutely.
They're so comfortable and invited.
It starts, it'll start like a noon tea and we'll just morph right into dinner.
That's the purpose of why
that's
you're
exactly
doing
exactly
it.
Right. And the tea started, the whole thing was some Queen Anne Duchess lady got hungry between
meals,
lunch and dinner, and so she invited friends over to have little tea cakes with her, and that's how the whole thing started. And people get confused with the difference between a high and a low tea.
Yes.
They think the tea where you have these lovely little noshes is actually the high tea. It's actually the low tea.
So it's just a snack.
It's a snack.
Okay.
But the high tea is like a supper that you have at the end of the day, but it's a snack. Some British royal got hungry in the middle of the day,
and
that's
and
why we have tea.
A snack.
Well, those British spread those cultures
Doritos.
All over.
No, she wanted tea cakes instead of Doritos.
Well, yes. I grew up in India, and tea in India is chai, which is it's a different type of a blend, it's with milk and whatnot. But we have quote unquote chai breaks like every half hour. Yeah. But it's part of the culture. It's part of getting together. It's part of take a break from work. Take a break from wherever you. Let's just come over here and we're just going to sit down. And sometimes it's fancy. Sometimes it's not. But you go to my mom's house right now. The first thing she'll ask you is, "You want some chai? You want mm-hmm. some tea?" And then we'll just sit down and just have some tea.
And what happens in the course of that? I mean, like we've got the coffee shops and people will sit for hours and talk at coffee shops. But over the course of a cup of tea. What happens in the context of human relationships? There's a connection that forms. And these beautiful things that I have on the table here and that I've showed you pictures of facilitate those connections. And that's why I just absolutely love it. It reminds me of everything, and it just sounds like terribly corny, but I'm a geek now, the whole world knows. But it symbolizes everything that is beautiful about the human connection, that we are wired to connect with each other, and there we can celebrate in the most ornate or in the most mundane kinds of ways. And so it's just a very beautiful thing that I'm like totally geeked out.
One of the other things that I find very charming about it is, we've talked about this before, the concept of how we as a society don't have the family meal anymore. We don't get together in a group to have that camaraderie, and how that's changed a lot of things anthropologically in our society, because a lot of the ways that stories would get passed down generationally would be over a meal or over as someone would be cooking, whether it be over a fire, in a kitchen, whatever it was. That was where a lot of those connections were made. Mm-hmm. And so we don't have as many of those. It is a destination for us to get together over a beverage or or a meal.
I also have, you know, crystal champagne flutes, and there's a mimosa in the mix there. So, you know, and I display my silver collection because I've got trays, cream and sugar, pastry dishes, water pitchers, teapots, coffee pots, and I display them on a shelf that I can see from just about everywhere in my kitchen. And just looking at them up there brings me joy because everything on that shelf is on purpose. Everything on that shelf reminds me about being intentional, about a meal, about a time together, about breaking. Every culture has a culture, a ceremony, if you will, where you break bread together. A tradition. Every culture has a tradition where you break bread together. And it reminds me to be intentional. My favorite thing in the whole world, when I die and go to heaven, I get to do this every day, and that's just sit and at a beautiful table with crazy people, having a fantastic conversation, enjoying a wonderful meal. That's my favorite thing in the whole world.
Sold. this is a tangential question. When you go into other people's, like, I'm thinking more like estate sales, like those big giant mansions on Grand Avenue and whatever, there's every once in a while they have estate sales, and I've gone to one just to, I kind of want to just walk through, but I saw a lot of what seemed like intentional acquisitions mm-hmm. of things, mm-hmm. right, that I'm assuming meant so much to that family or that individual that lived there. Now, either they've passed on or they're not in a space to maintain that anymore. Do you ever go through those estate sales and kind of see the things that they have that reminds you of, like, yep, I have a human connection, even though I've never met this person. They also like the same things that I like.
I went to this one consignment store on Hennepin Avenue and just about lost my mind. Because they had Sheffield silver in there, which is sterling silver from London. And then they also had silver made from Paul Revere. Most people don't know that Paul Revere was a silversmith. And the Bell family from Minnesota was where a lot of that collection came from. Thousands of dollars in value for those sterling silver connections. And I saw teapots that were similar to mine, and I saw, you know, the service, the tray, the teapot, the coffee pot, the cream, the sugar, all of that. And it's like, somebody else loves this as much as I do. And secondly, one day I got lost. I was at the Minneapolis Institute of Art, and I was looking at an exhibit. I think it was a sunken treasure exhibit. And I got lost trying to find my way out of the museum, and I stumbled upon a silver collection up on, like, the fourth floor. Paul Revere silver was there. Sheffield silver was there. And I have a Sheffield remake teapot. Yeah, it's and I was like, I have a piece of Sheffield silver, but it's not like as expensive as that, but it's like, you know, it's a remake. And I was like, I felt an instant connection.
Let's play Would You Rather. And so this is a very hypothetical Would You Rather, but would you rather have a piece of silver that you know had an amazing story, or have a piece of silver that you knew was of great monetary value?
No, the story. That's what does it for me. You know, and I, you know, and people come to my house and they see, like, oh my God, you should hawk that stuff. you know, and I'm not ready to do that. It's when I discovered the imprint on the bottom of the piece of silver, which unlocks a whole world that I wasn't alive for, and unlocks a whole series of history that I can, in the world of Google, look up and read about for hours because of that one little imprint. And then my mind starts to imagine and envision, you know, what happens. It's a story, Shannon. I collect silver because of the story and the behind it. Now, if I land upon a piece of sterling silver in my collection, no one's complaining.
Is there insurance for that? Does that make sense? Like, you have all this, you have this amazing collection, that would you Is it insured, or just in case something happens, natural
it
disaster?
It is insured.
Okay.
Yeah.
Does that go under renter's insurance and homeowner's insurance?
Good,
is that part of it?
Yeah. Okay. Yeah. I think that up until a certain point. Yeah.
Fair enough.
Yeah.
Is there anything that you are on a search for right now that you go, I would love to have X, Y, or Z in my collection?
Yeah. I'm holding in my hand a very ornate, very heavy silver teapot. This was my first one.
Yes.
And I absolutely lost my mind when I found it. Do you see how ornate it is with the flowers and the etching both on the handle,
the
top, you know, on the fluted spout. It's got the
footed legs.
It's very ornate, very beautiful. I would love to find another one like this.
Okay.
Like a pair?
I would love it. Mm-hmm. I went online and I found the companion pieces to this exact teapot.
Okay.
And I may actually buy.
Get those. That'll be your present to yourself this year.
Yes.
Okay.
I may actually do that.
Well, we appreciate you bringing in this and sharing it to us. And you share a lot of your history and your experience in your book, Pockets of Joy.
Yes,
so everybody can grab that. You can get that at her website, RoxanneBattle.com. That's Roxanne with one N. You can also go to PocketsOfJoy.com. But I want to make sure that we also remind everybody who are not familiar with your book, what made you decide to write the book, and what can they find in Pockets of Joy?
I wrote the book about how to find joy in the difficult spaces in life. And I went through both a personal and a professional pivot. And I write about both of them in the book and how I found and sustained joy. So the first part of the book is my story. It's my memoir. Then, and that's called The Pockets. The second half of the book is called The Joy. And I research, because I am a journalist, the science of happiness, mindfulness, positive psychology. And I give you 7 steps that no matter what difficulty you're going through, here are some steps that you can find and use to find joy. Namely, gratitude and intentionality and authenticity. I mean, I'm like totally geeking out here today because you guys are letting me be authentic in myself and like show my personality, who I am, and what really rocks my world or whatever like that. And there's great joy in that. And so I wrote that book hoping that I wrote Pockets of Joy, hoping that my personal story and the difficulties that I encountered and how I found joy in the middle of that would inspire other people to know that you can get to the other side and that joy can be found.
It does appear that you've had great success with I've been with you to a number of your book signings and a couple of your engagements and seen the way that people interact with you who have read your book. So have you had any surprises with the response?
Every single time I'm out in public, people want, and after I've spoken or after they read the book, the thing that resonates most with me is go, that's me, that's my story, or me too. Oh my God, I thought it was just me. And people, and you've seen this, Shannon, they come up to the tables with tears in their eyes, feeling understood. I laughed and I cried. Oh my gosh, this brought me so much joy. You know, you're talking about movies, Jaden, about how the director wants to create an emotional response. And in many ways, Pockets of Joy connects with readers in such a way that it creates an emotion, and that emotion creates a memory. And when you connect with something, that helps you find your way in some way. And I'm just thrilled that by being authentic, by talking about my pain and my joy, has helped other people.
I applaud you. So now, Jaden, now you know, next time you need to talk to somebody about actually finishing the book that you plan on writing, you can talk to Roxanne, because if she managed to finish her book in the midst of collecting all of these things,
silver.
You could do it.
I can do it.
I will do a personal consult after the podcast.
Okay.
No charge.
Well, our next episode of Be Our Geek is actually going to happen on location in Los Angeles, California. Right, Jaden?
Yeah.
We're going to figure this out. Now, one of the things that we promised ourselves, it turns out we are holistically as a Be Our Geek family and as a Twin Cities Film Fest family, we are going to Los Angeles for what kind of event?
It's a festival's 10-year anniversary celebration house party.
Yes. And so I do think it's interesting, like Roxanne, you're coming. We're all going to go together. We're going to figure this out. And we are promising ourselves, we are saying this now, we have to speak truth to power. We are going to do an episode in LA. We are not just going to party.
No.
We promise that we are actually
going to party. The party will be the backdrop. And it's an all-day party with a break in the middle.
Right.
So either we can do it at the break, we can do it before everybody gets happy.
This is what we want you to watch, Roxanne. Okay, because we've done this before. Jaden and I usually are pretty good about staying on task when we're out and about and having an event.
I'm worried about you, too.
No, listen. No, this is what you need to worry about. So Jaden has been with the Twin Cities Film Fest. This is their 10th year. And I knew him in college, so I'm very familiar with Jaden. So we know how we vibe. We have another friend who's known us both for just as long, but we drive him nuts. And that's our managing director of the Twin Cities Film Fest, Bill Cooper. And Bill Cooper is amazing, but we stress him out. And so
I don't know what doesn't stress out Bill.
And so a little
just inside, the way he's wired, but I think in the most brilliant way.
In a little inside baseball that you'll get to watch about when we're doing our podcast is just watch, because there have been other occasions where they were doing a Twin Cities Film Fest event and Jaden and I decided to do our podcast and it drives Bill nuts, but we're gonna do it anyway.
That's
a dicey I think you should. I think you guys should just do it and get it out of the way.
Oh no, we do it boldly, like in his face. And so the best experience
we just have to make sure Bill has enough drinks in his hand and he's
that he won't
time.
Like diva and throw him out at this. But he did diva out at us at the Twin Cities Actors Expo and it was so glorious. We'll have to send you the link to that expo, because we walk in with our case full of equipment to do our podcast.
We were in and out in 25 minutes.
But you would have thought we disrupted the entire day. He actually flourished a curtain at us in disrespect.
And he's gonna be there.
He was so upset.
Yeah.
So Bill, we love you. We're doing the podcast there. And so you can find out more, of course, about the Twin Cities Film Fest by going to TwinCitiesFilmFest.org. You can find more about Roxanne and get her book by going to her website, RoxanneBattle.com. Roxanne with one N, or as she puts it, a singular N.
You can also get there by PocketsOfJoy.com.
Perfect. And so we do have some great events that are coming up at the Twin Cities Film Fest throughout the rest of this year. And then we are going to roll directly into our main festival in October. So we encourage everybody to come out and be a part of that. Also coming up later this month, the Twin Cities Film Fest is partnering with the Ordway Theater here in the Twin Cities. They are doing A Night with Napoleon Dynamite. Yeah. So we are showcasing the film. You're going to be able to see that and also do a question and answer with the cast following the performance.
Wow.
All of that information is also available on our website, TwinCitiesFilmFest.org. So we're going to do some red carpet stuff. We're going to do a costume contest if you want to come down. There will be llamas on hand.
There
from what I understand.
Did you say mamas or llamas?
Llamas. There will be llamas. Okay. Yeah, there will be llamas available, and then we are actually going to talk to the primary cast members.
Maybe there'll be a llamas mamas there. Mamas
I think that'd be fantastic. So you can get that information again on our website and on Ordway.com. We always encourage you to be part of Be Our Geek, and you can join our family by following us, Be Our Geek Show, on Twitter, Facebook, and Instagram, and you can email us at beourgeekshow@gmail.com. And as always, we appreciate you being part of the family. We'll see you here next time on Be Our Geek, because everyone is a geek about something.
See you in LA.
Thank you.